Oh, boy. Chris Wallace, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you're hearing this news, but you know what? Maybe you had it coming. Maybe you should have thought this one through. You know, there's a whole new world out there for media. Bad, very bad news for Chris Wallace, possibly. I mean, you know, maybe he's got a heck of a contract that's ironclad and he'll be just fine. But it kind of has us wondering whether or not Tucker Carlson may have the last laugh on this one. We're going to talk about the shakeup that's expected to happen according to this rather gossipy paper. I'll preface it with that. That's also being sourced by Yahoo News. We have all the details on that. Plus, oh, Dan Rather, blast from the past there, huh? Dan Rather is coming out with his rules for how you can fix the media in 2024. Just who you want to hear from. Although maybe he's better than Whoopi Goldberg, right? Whoopi Goldberg back in the headlines again. We're going to talk about that on this Super Tuesday. Plus, ahead of the State of the Union, how bad really is Bidenomics? It's pretty darn bad. And I got a guy here who is just going to tell you how bad, and it's hysterical because Bidenomics.com, he got the website. Like the people in the Biden administration are so out in left field, literally, that they've got this whole thing about Bidenomics and they never even bought the Bidenomics.com website. And we've got breaking news, major developments in that Fannie Willis trial that could land Fannie in a whole bunch more trouble. Welcome to the program, everyone. I have some very, very special news I'm going to share with you as well about a brand new venture I have been working very diligently on for months and months and months with a very dear friend. It's very important to me. I cannot wait to announce this to you. So that is coming up as well. This is the Trish Regan Show. I am Trish. We're brought to you in part, as always, by our friends over at LegacyPMInvestments.com. LegacyPMInvestments.com, 1-866-589-0560. That is their website. Okay, let's begin with Tucker Carlson getting the last laugh. I mean, he may be, in fact, laughing all the way to the bank on this one because his nemesis, I say his nemesis because we know some of the things that Chris Wallace has said about him. His nemesis, Chris Wallace, is in the news these days, a report out of In Touch that was cited by Yahoo Entertainment News claims that there's a whole bunch of deck chairs that are about to change over at CNN. And in fact, Anderson Cooper, Chris Wallace, and more could be on the chopping block amid this new CEO, Mark Thompson. So he came over from the New York Times and he's sitting there and he's like, what the heck? All these TV people, oh my gosh, they make so much money. And Mark Thompson, who probably doesn't make what Anderson Cooper or Chris Wallace or the others are making, is sitting there going, I don't understand this. What is this star system that they have over at CNN? Why do these people make so much money? And, you know, he's kind of struggling. I mean, the whole business is struggling because none other than this, right? What we're doing here right now. Streaming media, it has totally upended the traditional cable legacy media outlets. And so they're struggling as they try and make ends meet, as the advertising models completely shift, and as the profitability margins get incredibly squeezed. And so let me quote from this story. Let's go to this. It says, Big Bucks talent will become history at CNN as the spiraling network's new honcho slashes budgets and takes aims at anxious anchors with oversized salaries, according to insiders. This is the report from Yahoo News Entertainment. New CEO Mark Thompson is preparing ruthless cuts to remake the network as ratings plunge, leaving Anderson Cooper, Chris Wallace, Wolf Blitzer, and Jake Tapper facing dates with the Axemen, a source says. Quote, Anderson knows he's on the chopping block because he makes a whopping $20 million a year. He's already starting to look for a new gig. A network insider exclusively tells In Touch. Chris Wallace takes home $8 million and figures he's a likely target, too. Well, at least they recognize that the handwriting's on the wall, right? Everybody's an adult about it. I'm still looking at it, though, and I'm going, you know what, Chris? If you had a big enough following, why wouldn't you have done what, frankly, most intelligent personalities nowadays do? And that's do their own thing, right? Look at all the people that have left Fox, whether it be yours truly, myself, whether it be my former colleague Megyn Kelly, whether it be my former colleague Lou Dobbs, whether it be my former colleague Tucker Carlson. Well, you know, everybody's kind of moved on and done their own thing. Anybody that can. Right now, I don't know. You know, maybe Chris Wallace needs the paycheck, although I kind of doubt it. I mean, did he not invest well? We're going to have more on that coming up. Over the years, I mean, did you really need to go to CNN for the paycheck? Here is Chris Wallace talking about his former colleague, my former colleague, Tucker Carlson, on his, I guess, CNN show. I don't actually even know where you can watch the guy. But anyway, here he is. He's kind of ornery because Tucker got that big interview, you see, with Vladimir Putin. And Chris Wallace, I don't know. I'm just guessing. Was he a little tad jealous? Take a peek.
Tucker Carlson showed up in Moscow this week to interview Vladimir Putin. It turned out to be anything but an interview. Putin droned on for 2 hours and 7 minutes while Tucker sat there like an eager puppy. Occasionally, but rarely, he got in a question, like this one about the power of the deep state in Washington.
It sounds like you're describing a system that's not run by the people who were elected, in your telling.
That's right. That's right.
But more telling than what Tucker asked is what he didn't ask. Nothing about why Putin invaded a sovereign country. Nothing about targeting civilians. Nothing about Russian war crimes. A reporter can ask Putin a tough question if he wants a real interview.
Why is it that so many of the people that oppose Vladimir Putin end up dead or close to it?
But apparently, that's not why Tucker went to Moscow. During the Cold War, gullible Westerners who spread Soviet propaganda were dismissed as useful idiots. But calling Tucker that is unfair to useful idiots. No, he's made a cynical decision to chase MAGA's affection for dictators. And what better way to cash in than Putin's Kremlin?
Whoa, ouch, 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 ouch. But I'm laughing actually really hard because it was his way of getting his little interview in there from 2018, maybe, with Vladimir Putin asking the tough question. Of course, we never got to hear the answer. I would have been kind of curious to hear that. Like, it's pretty clear that somebody was a little ornery about this. I'm just laughing at it because I'll tell you, you know, they think that women are bad in television. Let me tell you, men can be pretty bad too. And I think he's a bit of an example of that. Tucker had a funny thing to say about him, actually, when he was talking to Donald Trump. You guys may have seen this. I have played it for you before, but I want you to take a peek again because he calls him a fussy little man. And something else too. Watch.
When I debated him, I said, how come, and this was in front of probably not a friend of yours, Chris Wallace. He was the moderator.
Not a friend.
I said, why is it? He wants to be Mike, but he doesn't have the talent.
Little man.
He wanted to be his father, but he didn't have the talent of his father. His father was great.
A little fussy man.
His father interviewed me in 60 minutes.
Oh, that was priceless. Really and truly priceless. Anyway, look, I think that whether Chris Wallace goes or not this time around, the reality is such that CNN cannot afford their big ticket anchors anymore because there's been such a remarkable change in this industry. And it's one that we talk about. This sort of connection that you and I have here, and this is a live show. And yes, I see your comments live and I'll get out to a lot of these comments momentarily. Thank you. Oh, that's very, very complimentary of you, Ed Wizard. But the reality is such that in this new day and age, those legacy media networks where everybody's pretending like they have absolutely positively no bias, but they have a ton. Well, those days are over. Hey, I mean, really, just ask Dan Rather. Right? Dan Rather, do you remember him? Do we have this 1987 clip? This is like Dan Rather's claim to fame here because there was a big dust up in a presidential interview. Let's take a look.
I find this to be a rehash and a little bit, if you'll excuse me, a misrepresentation on the part of CBS who said you're doing political profiles on all the candidates, and then you come up with something that has been exhaustively looked into.
Mr. Vice President,
yes.
The president himself has said he wants all the facts out. He gave up such things as even his own diary. Every principal, including Secretary Shultz,
he
gave
up
some of it.
Well, Dan, let's be careful here because you're...
Yes, sir, I want you to be careful, Mr.
Profile,
Vice President, because
I will
of the problem
be careful.
Here.
It's not fair to judge my whole career by a rehash on Iran. How would you like it if I judge your career by those 7 minutes when you walked off the set in New York?
Well,
would you like that?
Oh, we should play those 7 minutes too. But anyway, that is Dan Rather getting into it there with Bush Sr. And Dan Rather wants you to know that he can fix the media. If you just listen to him, then he's got the prescription for how you can really fix the media going into 2024. Listen, I used to work at CBS News. I somehow survived Dan Rather, Bob Schieffer, and Katie Couric. So, all like within the span of a year and a half. So, hey, that's a claim to fame, right? Anyway, Dan, it definitely had a bias. And that was pretty darn evident. I think everybody's quite aware of that bias. So it's sort of funny to hear Dan Rather say, this is how we're going to fix the media in 2024. But these are his ideas. Let's throw him up and give him a little shout out for his little Twitter account. He says, if I may, there's something I need to get off my chest. As democracy remains under siege, it has been frustrating to watch the press, how the press covers politics these days. I am reminded by lessons that came to me during the Nixon years as a CBS news correspondent. By the way, that's part of the problem. Right. They're all still like from the Nixon year era, that entire entourage of people that then was managing news networks. That is the problem, because they all thought because of the Nixon thing that they had to be X, Y, and Z. And well, they're just hardcore liberals as a result. Let's go on to what he says, because he's got his little bit of advice. One, enough with the both-sidism. When one side lies intentionally and repeatedly, they are no longer entitled to the benefit of the doubt. They should be held to account right away. Do not simply repeat the narratives they spew. And yet, let's be very clear. There is one side that's been lying over and over and over again. And you know that Dan is in agreement with that side. Therefore, this whole little charade of his is kind of funny. Let's prioritize live fact checking. Okay, good. Yeah, let's do that. Let me tell you, Dan, you're not going to come out ahead on that side of things. And then he's got number three, and then he encourages you to go look at his newsletter for the rest. Do we have the number three? You see how he says, if Trump says the sky is green, don't assume it's green. It's so biased, ladies and gentlemen. And what's crazy about this is that he thinks he's not biased. He actually thinks he's right down the middle. And that's the irony of it all. Ask lawmakers hard questions. Yet, duh. Okay, and then he goes on to promote his newsletter, et cetera, et cetera. But I'll tell you, you know, this is kind of the same old from Dan Rather. He did this, I think, back in 2018. Do we have that clip? He was pushing the same darn stuff.
If you're really interested in identifying fake news and figuring out what to believe, if you're truly invested in the work of being a good, informed citizen, may I respectfully offer a short primer. Number one, understand that trusting a news outlet does not mean they're perfect. No one's perfect. It means they tell you when they screw up. Number two, don't rely on just one news outlet.
I don't disagree with him on any of it. I'm just saying that he somehow, in his own little tunnel vision, kind of like the Colorado Secretary of State that somehow thinks that the Supreme Court is ruining the country because they didn't go along with her decision to kick Donald Trump off the ballot. In his own like narcissistic state, he thinks that he's the only one that understands what news is. My point that I keep making over and over and over again is to listen to everything. I mean, this is what Chris Wallace missed, right? When he's like, oh my goodness, how dare Tucker Carlson go do an interview with Vladimir Putin? It's like, hey buddy, you know what? A real journalist does do that, because you've got to hear from this one and that one over here. And that's the only way that history really is properly recorded with all the biases, okay? Nothing's perfect. And we have to be able to cut through those biases, but wouldn't you rather hear them than ignore them? Anyway, that's Dan Rather pretending like he has no bias. I'll tell you this. You know what? I have bias, and I'm darn proud of it. My bias is for an economy that's going to grow, for a nation that's going to stay safe, and for equal opportunity for everyone, regardless of male, female, or the color of your skin, because we live in a meritocracy that is the United States of America. That's pretty simple, guys. That's my bias, and I wear it on my sleeve. Proudly, happily, I am a red-blooded American capitalist, which is why I am so excited to announce my new venture. I got to tell you, I have been working on this and working on this and working on this for months and months. I've been thinking about it for years. I've been talking to my really good friend, Rob Horton, whom I've known for years. And Rob, he's like a big time fund manager, superstar fund manager. He's been in the fund management business for 25 years, a brilliant investor. And he and I would discuss these things. I'd be like, Rob, you know, the mainstream media, this, that, and the other. And I look at financial media, especially because I've worked at all of them. Does anybody else have that claim to fame? And we're talking CNBC, Bloomberg twice, and Fox Business News. And then Market Watch as well. I've also been a front page economic columnist and market columnist for USA Today. So, yeah, I've had a lot of experience in the financial media. Rob Horton has had a lot of experience in actual investing. And both of us kept saying the same thing. Like, I know I'm hindered by what the network wants you to report on or what the ratings are going to deliver. He, on the other hand, was hindered by, well, I don't know, ESG, environmental social governance. I mean, you can't invest in that company because that's going to offend somebody, even if it's the best investment for an investor. So he and I kept talking about this and talking about this, and we said, you know what, we got to do something for everyday folks. And we decided to launch a newsletter called 76 Research, 76research.com. Look, I'm going to put it in the chat for you. Drew, if you have the video of the website, I'd love to show everyone because I'm just like super proud of this. And this is it right here. Our tagline is think independently, invest intelligently. You can put your name in, go to the website, 76research.com. You can read all about us. You can read about Rob, read about me. We've got the 76 Report, big flagship newsletter with a lot of analysis on what's going on politically, economically. You can sign up for that. You can also sign up. This is a big deal because we have what's called model portfolios. This is done a lot in the financial industry, but not as much sort of for everyday folks. And we've got an American resilience portfolio. We've got an inflation protection portfolio, right? If you want to watch against inflation. And we've got an income builder portfolio. So these are for long-term investors that really want to think about new ideas. And there's like 10 to 15 different stocks in each one of these. And I really, I'm telling you, Rob is brilliant. I think I'm pretty brilliant myself too. And I just wanted to be able to do this in a really constructive way to help all of you, because you've all asked me for investment advice, et cetera. And, you know, I was very passionate about finding a way to really communicate all of this to you, because it's important that you look out for yourself and your future, and you cut through the noise, because trust me, the institutions and the financial media news outlets, they are not going to tell you the truth. They never tell you the truth. They tell you what works for them. So 76research.com, that is the name of the website. You can go, there's a ton of free information. Get our free guide to independent investing. I encourage you to do that. And if one of you guys are in the chat, maybe you can put it up. But if not, hey, you know what? Who says I can't walk and chew gum at the same time? 76research.com. That is the website. So anyway, go check it out. I know you're going to love it. And we can talk about it a little bit later too, because I still have a whole show to get to. Whoopi Goldberg. So long as we're talking media, so long as we're talking about shakeups at CNN and Dan Rather trying to somehow fix the news industry, can we talk about Whoopi Goldberg, please? Because Whoopi Goldberg cannot leave The View soon enough. She will, because much like CNN, Disney is struggling with ABC. And Disney's struggling with ABC because of the simple fact that, well, again, the industry is changing. And digital media and streaming outlets are so much more valuable than the traditional networks. I mean, heck, Disney doesn't even want ESPN. They're out there saying they're going to sell it all, which can't happen soon enough, given that Whoopi is so irresponsible as to say things like this. What was she the other day saying that, well, hey, you know, maybe Biden can just lock up all Republicans? Nice one, Whoopi, really.
Well, the Supreme Court won't hear oral arguments until the end of April. Now, I just, you know, just let's look at a scenario where the Supreme Court says, yes, he has that. He has all those rights. He is immune from everything. Yeah. You know what Joe Biden could do since he is presently president?
What?
Whoa. He could throw every Republican in jail.
Yeah.
I mean, he could. I mean, this is not
because
a good thing.
Because
he had totally, he can go. What this means is he could do anything.
Yeah.
He could dismiss everybody's debt.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole bunch of great stuff that could happen, but let's really look at what this means.
Yeah.
So they're basically kicking the can down the road, though. They're not taking up this case immediately.
Right.
So what's their motivation then? If we all know that they can't do what you just said because of the extreme power that a president would have, what is their motivation for not doing it right away?
Well, unfortunately, some people are saying the motivation is that there are certain conservative justices that have been appointed by Trump that want to help him. And because we know the end result is if this case is not resolved by the time of the election, and he, God forbid, becomes the president of the United States, the Justice Department policy is that you cannot indict nor put on trial a sitting president, right? And so it's his get out of jail.
He could throw him in jail.
But it's his get-out-of-jail-free card.
No, I'm saying Biden could throw. Yeah, see, this is a slippery slope, because if they give him this immunity,
what's good for the goose
is good for
Biden. What
I also will say is they're listening to these arguments in April. The end of their term is in June, right? They return again, I believe, in October. The Bush v. Gore case happened real quick. Do you remember that? The Supreme Court knows how to work real fast.
That was the day Jamal.
Anyone else find these women to be wildly irresponsible? Here's another example of that irresponsibility. And another example of why Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, needs to cut the cord fast with this show. And in particular, this lady.
I'm going to be on day one. I'm going to be a dictator. Who says it to you, tells you, I'm going to put you people away. I'm going to take all the journalists. I'm going to take all the gay folks. I'm going to move you all around and disappear you. If that's the country you want, you know who to vote for. If that's not the country you want, you have to make a decision.
All right. I'm going to make a decision to never watch The View again. Actually, I never watch it. I go and look for little clips for you. But to actually consume that in its entirety would be a form of torture, would it not? Right? But hey, look, we're following Dan Rather's advice. We're listening to the other side, right? Ha ha. Anyway, Whoopi Goldberg, I do think that she is going to suffer the same fate as potentially some of these people at CNN. Again, you have the CNN CEO who comes from print and is like, I can't believe these TV people make that much money. So he's like, oh my gosh, this is too much money. He wants to redo the place. He wants to get rid of some of these big, big ticket anchors. And meantime, you've got Bob Iger, CEO of Disney, and he's looking at ABC and he's looking at ESPN and he's realizing this is not the future. We don't want to waste another day or another dollar on any of this. We need to cut the cord ourselves. He told David Faber, my former colleague from CNBC, that at Sun Valley. Remember this? Watch.
Transformative work is dealing with businesses that are no growth businesses and what to do about them, and particularly the linear business, which we are expansive in our thinking about, and we're going to look expansively about opportunities there, because clearly it's a business that is going to continue to struggle.
Well, let's stop there for a second then and let me ask you about it. We're talking, I guess, ABC, the network, the stations, but then the cable networks as well.
Yes, correct.
FX, Nat Geo. Is it possible you would look to sell them?
We're going to be expansive. I think if you can interpret what that word means. You
know. Okay, so I'll interpret it for you. My sources tell me they are definitely selling their networks. And in fact, I have sources that say that ABC News has actually sat down and had conversations, Disney's had conversations with Nexstar. Possibly Nexstar would buy it. The other option is for a private equity group to come in and buy it. Now, let me tell you, any of these groups are going to be like sharpening their pencils, and they're going to look at each and every one of these anchors' salaries, and they're going to say, how can we do this cheaper? Do we really need Whoopi and all of her liability and all of the whatever she costs us? And I'm pretty darn sure the answer is going to be no. So now Whoopi will be fine. I'm assuming she's made plenty of money over the years, and she can go out and do her own thing, as again, any personality worth their salt is actually going to do. It's probably what Mr. Wallace should have done as well. I mean, hey, you know, say what you want about Dan Rather, at least he did his own thing. And so this is, as I keep saying, this is the way of the future. And you're not going to have these big personalities on these network platforms anymore. So the good news is you won't have to watch them there. And the people that do want to watch them, all like five people that want to watch Whoopi Goldberg, guess what? You can go watch her all day long when she does her own thing, which I'm sure she will, because there's no way that any smart investor is going to go with paying big, big, big price tags for some of these anchors. It just doesn't make any sense. All right, I want to turn to another story right now. Former Obama campaign manager David Axelrod admitting reality that the more the left goes after Donald Trump, the more they make him, quote, indomitable seeming. This is good. I mean, you know, I appreciate Axelrod at least being honest on this. And it is indeed the truth. And the left is so, frankly, out of touch that they don't realize that they're actually helping him not only to likely secure the nomination, don't forget it is Super Tuesday, but probably to beat Joe Biden. You look at every poll right now, and David Axelrod is telling them, listen, these lawsuits, they start adding up. They make him a far bigger deal. Take a peek.
All of these legal travails that he has, all of these indictments, all of these lawsuits and so on, has given him a chance to look indomitable, look strong, look resilient. And that's actually in some ways helped him. Now, the main cases haven't gone to trial yet. That could be a different story. But he's actually used these to propel himself to this moment.
Yeah. Well, think about it. I mean, you got Letitia James going after the guy for $500 million. You don't think that some people in the middle are going to look at that and say, oh, gee, I think that's a little bit excessive, considering that there was no victim in that alleged crime? It's going to go now to the appellate court. But in the meantime, she's not even going to allow for what, the 30-day stay where, you know, you get 30 days to be able to pay the bill. He offered her $100 million. She's like, no way. No, I want the full 500 and something. I mean, the number keeps getting inflated because you got to factor in interest and it's all of those things, et cetera. But it's wild. And so any normal person looking at that says, gee, how is that fair? How is it fair for Letitia James to come in out of nowhere and say, I don't think that Mar-a-Lago is worth that? By the way, great report. Actually, it was in Fortune magazine over the weekend about how real estate prices are just going up, up, up and away in Palm Beach. So whatever Mar-a-Lago was worth, it's probably worth more, even more at this point. Letitia's like, nope, I don't think it's worth that. And therefore, I'm going to sue you in civil court and hold you responsible for this. And put a, what was it, the judge put a $355 million price tag on him. And then you add up everything else and it comes north of $500 million. Or like I like to say, because this is reality, folks, $500 million. And it's all politically charged. Remember, like to simplify it a little bit, if you decide to go get a home equity line of credit and you go to your bank and you're like, hey, I would like a home equity line of credit. And they say, well, how much is your house worth? And I say, it's $500,000. My house is worth $500,000. And they say, well, we're going to send an appraiser out there to look and see if your house is worth $500,000. And then we'll make a decision on whether or not to lend you the money. Now, if the bank decides it's worth $500,000, the appraiser decides it's worth $500,000, and they lend you the $500,000, then you pay the money back. I'm sorry, like, where's the problem? Well, Letitia's out there saying, no, 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 no. I think your house is worth only $350,000. You're sitting there going, well, what the heck is this Letitia James coming in into my private business between my banker and myself? Right? Now, I mean, granted, he needs to be careful about the square footage. I think he said it was one thing and it was really another, but he did have a lot of little asterisks in there saying, do your due diligence. In other words, none of this is verified. Do your own diligence. It was the bank's decision on whether or not to lend. The bank decided to lend. The bank got paid back. And yet Letitia James swoops in and hits them with $500 million. David Axelrod, ladies and gentlemen, is positively, absolutely right. The more they go after him, the more extraordinary he appears. Because people are like, hey, you still haven't got him. The Supreme Court had to weigh in after the state of Colorado said, we're taking you off the ballot. believe the state of Maine tried the same thing, and then you had Illinois as well. And so all of these things start to add up and effectively are helping him to become a stronger candidate than ever before. And you look at every single poll that comes out, and every single one tells you the same thing. He's consistently 5 to 6 points ahead. Joe Biden was quoted today as saying, no, 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 I'm ahead in the polls. I'm ahead in five of them. It's like, nobody, you're actually behind 5 points in all of them. I think there was only one in the last month that showed anything different. So here's the reality of the situation at present. Donald Trump stands every shot of winning, and the left is going to go absolutely bonkers between now and 2024. All the more reason, make sure you subscribe, make sure you hit thumbs up, like, share, do all those things, because it's important for us to have this connectivity and to be able, right, to get the message out and speak to each other. I have some very big news to share with you on Donald Trump. You know, I have my sources, and in talking to some of my sources, including some sources close to the campaign, I just heard a new name that I guarantee you haven't thought about for vice president at the top of the GOP ticket alongside Donald Trump. This is very, very interesting to me, and I want to kind of preview this a bit. Donald Trump was on Fox and Friends this morning by phone, and he was talking about the need to claim back a city like New York, which is clearly struggling with a lot of issues, from the economic struggle to the border struggle that's affecting them so significantly. Take a listen.
You've gained ground 20 points with black voters. I mean, what's the operation going to look like in this general election? I hear from your advisors that there's going to be no city left behind.
We're going after everything. Look, we have a different country than we had even 2 years ago. This whole migrant invasion of our country, destruction of our country. You look at what's happened to New York and Chicago. You look at what's happened to Los Angeles. We have a much different country in many ways, but also from a voting standpoint. People that were modestly happy 3 years ago are devastated right now. Their country has been invaded. They can't go to hospitals. They can't go to schools. They can't use their playgrounds for their kids. They cancel out the little leagues. I read today where little leagues are being canceled out all over the country because you have migrants living all over the parks and the fields. Our country is a mess, and right. I think you have a much different country than you do. We're going to make a heavy play for New York. We're going to make a heavy play for Virginia, states that generally don't go Republican. I think they're going to go Republican in a lot. I think they've got, I think the Democrats have themselves a big problem.
And I think he's right. Anyway, he's making a point that he wants to go for these areas that historically have always been Democrat strongholds. What's a way to do that? He said, I want to make a play for New York. So this is very interesting, you guys. Again, a name that you haven't really heard before. Drew, do we have the sound of former President Trump talking with Bret Baier? I'm wondering if Drew has that, because he was on saying to Bret Baier recently, you know what, like, it's really not that big a deal who I pick. It's not going to make or break anything. It's not really going to be earth-shattering. So he was trying to make the point that, you know, it's not going to be some kind of superstar like Tucker Carlson or maybe like Vivek Ramaswamy, whom I know you guys all like. I like him too. But let's watch him, Donald Trump, with Bret Baier here and take a peek.
You said in our town hall that you had an idea, or you might have already decided about your VP pick. When do you think you're going to make that?
Well, it's never really had that much of an effect on an election, which is an amazing thing. Both election and primary, it's never really had much of an effect. I may or may not release something over the next couple of months. There's no rush to that. It won't have any impact at all. The person that I think I like is a very good person, pretty standard. I think people won't be that surprised. But I would say there's probably a 25% chance it would be that person.
Is Senator Tim Scott on the list now?
No, he's a great guy. You know, he endorsed me. There's an example. Nikki comes from South Carolina. Tim Scott is from South Carolina. But if you look, the governor, great governor, another senator, Lindsay, we happen to like Lindsay, but Henry McMaster knows her very well. He endorsed me. It's very hard for a governor to endorse somebody when you have, you know, I mean, Henry McMaster was the lieutenant governor under her. And he endorsed me, and he's going to be here tonight. In 15 minutes, you're going to be watching him speak. I'm going to introduce him. He's a great guy. He's done a great job. So everybody, almost everybody in South Carolina has endorsed me. What does that tell
you? Okay. So you heard him say, you know, it's not going to be like that earth-shattering, and he's kind of trying to temper everybody's expectations. But we also heard him say he wants to make a play for New York. So there's one guy out there that we have not been talking about. And you know, what I hear through the grapevine is he doesn't really care about, oh, you got to pick a woman or you got to pick a minority or this, that, or the other. Like, he's not, he's a true believer in the meritocracy, right? It's like, okay, who's going to help me win this thing? And I don't think he's as obsessed with checking a particular demographic. And so the name I'm hearing is the congressman from New York, Lee Zeldin. Representative Zeldin from New York. Take a look at him here. He was recently on with Martha McCallum, and he's talking about how so many representatives in New York have had success as Republicans, which you'd be kind of surprised about. But it shows you, it sort of joins with what Donald Trump was saying about how people, you know, even in New York, which was forever like blue territory, are saying, I don't think so. This isn't working for me. Watch Representative Lee Zeldin.
I was running just a couple years ago. The migrant issue, the border crisis, wasn't even a top three issue back then. Obviously, it is now. President Biden's numbers are worse. Kathy Hochul's numbers are worse. Eric Adams's numbers are worse, too. And people look at New York and they say it's a blue state because of these very populated blue counties in New York City. Staten Island, obviously excluded. But you look at the rest of the state and you're trying to understand, how does New York elect a congressional delegation November 22 that has 11 Republicans? It's because a lot of the suburbs and rest of the state they vote red. They're ready to vote for President Trump. You just posted that stat as it relates to the Jewish vote in New York. We've seen this over the course of the last few administrations, from President Obama and the Iran nuclear deal to President Trump coming in and from moving the embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, withdrawing from the nuclear deal, signing the Taylor Force Act into law, recognizing Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights, signing an executive order to combat anti-Semitism. And then President Biden comes in and it rolls back a maximum pressure campaign against Iran, is a little bit, you know, trying to straddle both sides post October 7th as he has an issue within his base, within the Democratic base, as there are a lot of people who support the pro-Palestinian position, and some of them, you know, outwardly supporting a pro-Hamas position. So that's something that President Biden's dealing with. So the rightward shift. You point out the Jewish population, we see with the Asian Americans, with the Dominicans, and more. And the last thing I would say is, you show that Siena College poll for four consecutive months. This has shown a competitive race, Biden versus Trump statewide. So if there's one Siena College poll that shows a close race, you say, maybe it's an outlier. Mm. But there's been four consecutive Siena College polls, and they only poll 22% Republican, but the turnout is always higher. That would be by far the worst Republican turnout in the history of the state. Clearly, there's going to be more Republican turnout than that Siena College poll showing a close race.
So if Donald Trump wants to make a very, very big push for New York to show that he's firmly with Israel, that he is strongly against Iran, that he's the opposite of Biden in those respects, maybe the answer is to have Lee Zeldin as his vice president. Wow, right? Think about that. Let's all digest it. We can talk about it at the end of the show because I know you're all weighing in on that. But it's a name that we haven't discussed before, and it's a name that could be very important to him. And by the way, good luck. You know, Rachel Maddow, MSNBC, and the rest of you, you know, you keep wanting to make these horrendous comparisons with, you know, the worst leader in modern history. Good luck doing that, considering that Donald Trump has a Jewish son-in-law, a daughter who is converted to Judaism, Jewish grandchildren, and then might go with a Jewish vice president. That's going to be a hard narrative for the left to really fight. And look, New York is different. Even when it comes to the lefties in New York, they're different, which is why AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, is trying to back away from some of her early comments that she was making that were anti-Israel in nature when she was standing with the squad, remember? You got to see this, guys, because I'm really kind of shocked. I saw her pretty triggered here. She went into this just wild rant, absolutely wild rant, because protesters ambushed her at a movie theater. She was there with her boyfriend, and they were seeing some movie, and they confronted her about her stance on Israel, her stance on Gaza. They don't feel that she is pro-Palestinian enough. And watch the aftermath. Take a peek.
You're going to cut it, and you're going to cut this, and you're going to clip this so that it's completely out of context. I already said that it was, and y'all are just going to pretend that it wasn't over and over again. You're not helping these people, and you're not helping them.
You refuse to.
You're not helping them.
Ooh, okay, so she's pretty angry. It was a little much. I don't know if she needed to get that angry. It just seemed like one little lonesome guy there. But she's flipping out. I think we kept it clean because there might have been some bad language in there too. I'm not positive, but I know that she was pretty triggered. And her problem really is because she needs to kind of eat her cake and her have her cake and eat it too. She's trying to walk two sides here of this challenging issue. She's got the extremists on the left that really are very anti-Israel, while simultaneously she's understanding that, hey, everyone in Queens that she's representing, they're not anti-Israel. And so this is the opportunity, again, for Donald Trump. This is an opportunity. Can he take New York? I think he can. He told us he wants to take New York. And if you listen to what Representative Lee Zeldin was saying, this is a land of opportunity for conservatives. And so think about that. It really, really, it would be amazing. Just amazing. It's kind of like when he took Pennsylvania in 16. Just incredible stuff. But look, the Gaza situation clearly is a problem for President Biden. He came out very pro-Israel originally. He's been backing away from that. You get Kamala Harris, who broke ranks with the administration over the weekend and said that she was all for the ceasefire and we had to have a ceasefire. And it's just like, wow, you break ranks? You're the vice president and you're breaking ranks with the president? What's that about? Oh, I guess they just want to appease everyone, right? You can have a little of this and you can have a little of that in the Biden administration. So today she's caught talking about this issue, about how she wants a ceasefire, etc. And I got to tell you, her language just turned once again into word salad. I'm like, how can this woman be talking about such sophisticated and frankly extraordinarily important and delicate topics while saying things like let Hamas do their thing? What the heck does that I mean, look, we just got that report from the UN today. I don't want to get into it because I'm probably going to start crying if I do. I mean, it's just disgusting what happened on October 7th and the way they victimized women. It's absolutely uncalled for. And the fact that she's negotiating with these terrorists, I'm sorry, this is just wrong on every single positive level. Yet here she is, and she can't even say it right.
And I'll tell you, the president has been an extraordinary leader in getting us to this point that we have this 6-week deal. And so Hamas needs to do its thing, as I talked about yesterday in Selma. We all want this conflict to end as soon as possible, and how it does matters.
Do their thing. I'll tell you, this is increasingly now an issue of Joe Biden's age, as the New York Times reported over the weekend. Not just his age, I guess his lack of capacity to really deal with some of the most challenging issues facing our country, facing our border, facing us internationally, facing our economy, all of these things. And the fact that she would be president if anything happens to him. So when you go to vote in 2024, it's really not Trump, who we assume at this point will be the nominee. It's not Trump versus Biden, but Trump versus Kamala Harris. Remember that. Think about that. It's Trump versus Kamala. And I'm pretty darn sure that Trump's going to win that one all day long. It is Super Tuesday. Voting is underway in 14 states right now. 14 states and America's Samoa. And one can anticipate. There you go. Nice little nifty graphic, courtesy of our friends over at Daily Mail. I thought this was great. They just lined it all up. You got Vermont, Massachusetts, Maine. You got Minnesota, Tennessee, Texas, Colorado, California, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Alabama, North Carolina, Virginia, Utah, Minnesota. I don't think I missed any. We have Tennessee as well. Alaska, which is going to come in very late. And, of course, America, Samoa. So this is kind of like the big day, right? This is the big sort of moment. And I'm just saying, what's going to happen to Nikki Haley? Seriously, guys, what is going to happen to Nikki Haley after today? So apparently she has nothing on her calendar. Wow, she had some $14 million to spend on her campaign. It took her all the way through today. I'm told she's in South Carolina today. She has put together some kind of coalition in Louisiana, which will be coming up soon. And she's got some ground game going on there. But I'm wondering what happens to Nikki Haley after tonight. With nothing on the calendar, is this her moment to say, okay, well, you know, I had a good run at it. It's over. A lot of people say she wants to cling on until the very, very end in hopes that something happens to Donald Trump from a legal standpoint. The problem with that, of course, is that even if something happens to him from a legal standpoint, I don't think she's going to be the one that they shoo in as the nominee. Because she's broken ranks effectively with Donald Trump. I mean, one of the things she did successfully early on and which kept her in the race was she's sort of like, okay, you know, paying homage to him while simultaneously trying to differentiate herself. But it's been very hard for all of these candidates. It's why I said from the very beginning, Ron DeSantis really didn't stand a chance because Ron was trying to run to the right of Trump. She was trying to run to the left of Trump. And there just wasn't any room really on either side. The base is with Trump. And so Nikki Haley, consequently, is going to have to figure out her next step, which, hey, maybe we'll be at Northrop Grumman or Lockheed Martin or one of those great places. I don't know. We shall see. Hey, listen, we have some major news I want to get to on Fannie Willis because this could actually blow the entire trial up in ways that would be extremely beneficial for Donald Trump and extremely negative for Fannie Willis. But so long as we're talking about these issues that really, really matter in the election, one of them happens to be Bidenomics, right? I mean, Bidenomics, by all measures, is, I think you can just flat out come and say it's been a total failure. I mean, when prices are up between 18 and 20% from where they were in 2020, that's a lot more than the 2.5% the Federal Reserve likes to shoot for, ladies and gentlemen. And then when you look at some things like rents, they're up even more, or mortgage prices. I mean, the amount of money that people are paying in mortgage costs now versus, say, what they were paying in 2020, it's up 66%. So this is pretty extraordinary. When we go into the State of the Union this week, we are going to hear over and over and over again how Bidenomics is working. Bidenomics is just great. Well, what cracks me up, this is actually pretty funny, is that for all this talk of Bidenomics and all those nifty TikTokers there in the Biden administration, nobody had the bright idea to go and buy Bidenomics.com. Wouldn't you think that they might just try that? Well, I sat down with a guy who was smart enough to actually go and do this. And we just had a fantastic conversation about Bidenomics. We just did this yesterday. I want to bring this to you. I'm right here with you. We're going to talk in the chat a little bit about the conversation. Here he is from the Americans for Prosperity. Take a listen. The guy smart enough to actually be out there calling one Bidenomics out and getting the handle to begin with. About whether Bidenomics really is working or not. I think we know the answer is Akash Chegule from Americans for Prosperity. He is the Vice President of Government Affairs over there at AFP. It is good to see you.
Good to see you, Trish. Thanks for having me on.
So, you know, every single poll you look at right now shows that people are really just tired of the Biden economy. Every single thing I see. And yet the administration keeps telling us Bidenomics is working. Bidenomics is working. Oh, inflation's coming down. But inflation isn't really coming down, is it, Akash? I'd like you to explain that and refute that point, if you would.
No, the White House can point to whatever little charts and line graphs they can, but you can't argue how people are feeling. And the way people are feeling is correct, which is that their life has gotten a lot more expensive since President Biden took office. And so even if these inflation indicators are down year over year, month over month from what they were a year ago, inflation has just been elevated and it's been climbing since the president took office and spent his additional $6 trillion with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer when the Democrats controlled Congress. And so even the baselines that they're measuring from are higher and higher and higher each month. The end result, Trish, is that the average American family is spending $11,400 more per year to afford the same quality of life that they had before Joe Biden took office. Our organization is going to hold him and the people that voted for his agenda accountable this year.
Akash, it's amazing. Like, that is truly, truly remarkable. We haven't seen an inflation uptick like that, what, since Carter?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Certainly not in my lifetime. And the thing is, in the 70s, it was kind of a slow drip. Here, we know how obvious the connection is. It's the trillions of dollars in reckless spending without doing anything to increase the supply of goods and services in the economy. Anyone, even without an economics degree, you don't need a PhD in economics to know that dumping trillions of dollars into the economy without increasing supply is going to drive up prices. That's what Americans are dealing with.
And they did it for so long. And by the way, it wasn't just what was happening in D.C. from Congress and from Biden. I mean, my gosh, he handed out the third stimulus check when he came into office. And I'm like, seriously? Right? Like, by then, the economy was already opening up. And so it was just like a windfall for people. And so you could just see it. It was like, I mean, I was watching in real time, of course. I was the crazy person in August of 2020 when Donald Trump handed out the second stimulus check. I was like, be careful, be careful, be careful, because you combine that with what the Federal Reserve was doing, printing like there was no tomorrow. And they wouldn't stop printing. And they just kept printing and printing and printing and printing. And I'm like, whoa, it's coming at us from every single direction. How would you not have inflation? I mean, even today, you look at hotel prices, you look at airfare prices, you look at egg prices, for goodness sakes. Everything is higher.
Trish, 59% of Americans say they feel angry, anxious, or frustrated when they go grocery shopping. Now, that's a data point. Your listeners don't need to listen to polls to know that they're frustrated. I mean, we heard these stories all over the country the past couple of years. If you recall, AFP was doing events at gas stations and grocery stores. We were actually helping people, afford the price of gas during, you know, the worst months of inflation, things like that. Some of the stories we heard, I mean, I remember I was doing an event in Pennsylvania, a mom who literally week to week was choosing between filling a full tank of gas to get to work or enough diapers for her baby to last until next week. I met a couple who used to go out to dinner once a month and has to cancel date night because restaurant prices are so expensive. And these are short-term indicators, but then you look at interest rates, people's ability to buy a car if their family is growing, buy a new home. I mean, the American dream is getting further and further out of reach. And that's simply not what you're hearing from the White House, because they don't want to be honest about what's going on. And so we're doing it for them at Bidenomics.com starting
today. Okay, I got to get to that. But I mean, gosh, it's striking how quickly it happened too, right? That it shows you, and this is why I'm a nerd for policy, and especially when it comes to economic policy, but it just shows you how important this stuff is and that you don't want to mess around, because you can so quickly screw it up, as this team has, frankly. I mean, and they had every warning. I mean, they didn't have to listen to me, Larry Summers, their friend, right? Who is a tried and true Democrat, or at least he may be feeling that he's more conservative these days. But he was trying to warn them too, in terms of the Federal Reserve and in terms of Congress, et cetera, that you were going to have this mass inflation. And sure enough, we've got it. So Bidenomics.com, this one cracks me up. Okay. So I was reading about you guys, and I learned you had Bidenomics.com, and I'm like, wait a second. Like, Joe Biden doesn't own, White House doesn't own Bidenomics.com. Americans for Prosperity owns this one.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been calling it Badenomics and all these things. And then all of a sudden you realize Bidenomics.com itself is available for a White House full of millennial and Gen Z TikTokers who live online and seem like they haven't touched grass in months. Not to take this basic digital 101 step to purchase Bidenomics.com. Left the opportunity for us not only to buy this domain, Trish, in advance of the State of the Union, but we're going to be doing, people can see at Bidenomics.com, a rhetoric versus reality fact check of the president in real time today, this week, at the State of the Union, and throughout the fall. as they're on the campaign trail. They're in these key states and districts. We will be using Bidenomics.com ads and many other outlets to tell people what's really going on with this economy that they're not hearing from Joe Biden and the Democrats who voted for the agenda that caused this inflation crisis.
It's incredible. And people should go and check it out, Bidenomics.com, because that's where you're going to actually be able to cut through this noise and cut through this spin. I'm sort of surprised. I mean, I look at it and I'm like, okay, politically speaking, I don't think this is working for you, buddy. Like, you keep talking about how great the economy is, and actually it makes you look more and more apart and separated from your core constituency that you need to go out and vote for you, because you look like, you know, you're pie in the sky, Marie Antoinette-esque, as opposed to somebody who really understands and appreciates what they're going through. You can't sit there and tell people like it's better when in my neck of the woods, and granted, I live in the New York City suburbs, so it's like $7.99 when you go for eggs, like just for a dozen eggs. And I'm like, wow, I mean, this is, you know, this is steep. And so when Joe Biden tries to tell me that there's nothing to worry about, it just makes me, and I think every other American, feel like you are so out of touch. There's no hope.
No, totally. I think it's two problems. The American people already don't trust Joe Biden because of his age and he can't string together a sentence. And then you have the unwillingness to even acknowledge the fact that these problems exist. So it's like, one, you caused this problem. Two, you won't admit that it's wrong. And then three, you're incapable of fixing it. And so it's this double, triple whammy. I think our goal at Americans for Prosperity with Bidenomics.com and our efforts throughout this year is to make sure that people remember why they're in the situation. They don't need us to tell them things are expensive. What we're making sure people know is that it's because of trillions of dollars in reckless spending, tens of thousands of pages of regulations, and things like giveaways to the green energy industry and big labor unions, and prioritizing his political allies over average Americans is why we're in this situation.
You know, Akash, I never got that one either. I mean, from a national security standpoint and from a healthy economy standpoint, it seems very logical, right, that you would want to ensure that you have the most energy possible, certainly within your own market space that you can have more control over. You knew that things were heating up overseas. I would assume you knew that they were heating up enough that you might actually have to look at sanctions on Russia, which means you're going to take all this natural gas right off the market. And, you know, what's that going to do to natural gas prices when you take off a big chunk? I realize it's fungible, whatever. And, you know, Russia's doing fine because it still finds a way to sell its natural gas for more money now. But reality is it drove up prices and you had no alternative, nowhere else to go. It's like the left hand's not talking to the right hand. I mean, again, none of this is, you say, you don't have to have a PhD in economics to figure this out. I mean, it seems, again, pretty obvious stuff. You're going to take off a supply source and you got nothing to replace it with. And you think it's okay because the average American should have to pay for that? Like, they're taking it on the chin. They're the ones feeling the brunt of this pain.
Here's the greatest irony, Trish. It's not like he caused this overnight transition to renewable energies. All we did was drain down the strategic production reserve to its lowest levels ever. And then he went and begged Venezuela and Iran to produce more natural gas. I mean, we're going to countries that do things dirtier than we do for the environment, have all kinds of human rights abuses, and we're harming American workers in the process while also not even achieving his goals in the energy and environment space, while making the country weaker and more susceptible to uncertainty on the global scale. I mean, the lesson here really is one for, you know, the American people in general, but I think policymakers in Washington of both parties, right? The American people don't want a lot from government. They want hands off a free market that creates opportunity for them to build a better life for their family. We don't need what the Democrats have been pushing for the last 4 years. What we need is for Republicans to get the message that this is what Americans want to hear. This is the kind of leadership they want. Common sense, limited government, free markets, and
hear, hear. My thanks to Akash. It's just amazing. Bidenomics.com, and you got to check it out because it's the truth. It's the truth on what's happening in our economy right now, even though Biden's going to try and spin something totally insane when you hear him at the State of the Union. And when you hear him every day, right? Like, this, they got their talking points. And I'm like, guys, you know, if you were smart, you would actually be honest with Americans. The Americans appreciate that transparency and that honesty. It's what Donald Trump actually did a really good job at. Sometimes too good a job at, right? Like sometimes he was too honest, and that's what totally freaked out the so-called deep state, which is why you have all of these lawsuits coming at him from every which possible way. Breaking news to bring you on the Fannie Willis affair. Pun intended. Okay. Brand new story in the New York Post shows that, well, there's another witness there that is going to be a problem for Ms. Willis. This is a witness who's prepared to testify, according to documents filed by a co-defendant of former President Donald Trump, David Schaefer. So these court papers show that a prosecutor named Cindy Lee Yeager, she overheard a conversation in which Fannie Willis was warning her boyfriend, Nathan Wade's lawyer, that they're, quote, coming after us. The direct quote is, they are coming after us. You don't need to talk to them about anything about us. Willis is alleged to have warned Terrence Bradley, the lawyer for Nathan Wade, in a September 2023 phone call. So again, this story being reported first by the New York Post, a new witness, quote, could testify Fannie Willis warned her lover, Nathan Wade's former business partner, forgive me, business partner, to stay quiet about their affair. This is a pretty explosive filing, shall we say, a very, very explosive filing, because this complicates in new ways. See, at issue here, and this is something that the ladies on The View don't understand. I played you some of that sound yesterday. They really, really fundamentally don't understand it. But at issue here is the timing of the relationship, because Fannie Willis went out and hired this guy, Nathan Wade, who had no experience really doing what he would wind up doing. And he was there to go after Trump with her. Not the best choice from a work perspective, but also from a personal perspective, because she effectively just kind of hired the guy that she was allegedly having a thing with. It has now been discovered that he visited her house, according to Trump's legal team, some 35 times, and that there were some 2,000 phone calls, and that there were some 3,500 text messages. Like, I don't know how anybody texts that much ever. Like, that's really quite something. But at issue, of course, was the timing, because if she's hiring somebody and then he's taking her out to dinner and he's taking her on multiple cruises, which she allegedly paid him back in cash for, that was a whole thing that was kind of funny during her testimony, then she stood to benefit financially. Right? That's the issue. If she was benefiting financially, then she was effectively taking money from the taxpayers in a fraudulent type way. And now it gets worse, because now she allegedly is lying about it. You know, remember when Martha Stewart, she was in deep trouble. She wound up in jail for this because she lied to the SEC. It wasn't even that she was entirely off in what she had done, as we can all recall, that insider trading thing. It was that she lied about it. You see, the lie itself, I mean, and this woman should know better, Fannie Willis, she's supposed to be a lawyer, is she not? And yet there she is, according to this Cobb County, Georgia prosecutor, Cindy Lee Yeager. Apparently, she was telling the business partner of Nathan Wade that he needed to stay quiet about the affair that she was having with Nathan Wade. Really, really quite something. I mean, I actually think that this could put her in a whole new set of trouble. But let me point out that they did say that they were only romantic. This is under oath, by the way. Willis and Wade were saying under oath. Again, this is why it's so, you know, remember Martha Stewart, okay? She's just escalated herself into a whole new host of problems here, Ms. Willis has. Willis and Wade have said under oath that they were only romantic between 2022 and 2023, long after the case started. In other words, They got together when they were working on the case. Not that it makes it necessarily any better, but the reality is if she went out and hired this guy just because she was having a thing with him and then he's taking her on cruises and this, that, and the other, and suddenly he's making more money than he ever made before, of which she's benefiting from that financially speaking, well, then you've got a really, really big problem. You couple that with potentially lying under oath, and I'm telling you, this is a headache. I mean, I don't know what the penalty is. I'm just going back to the Martha Stewart example. I mean, could Fannie Willis herself find herself in jail? It's entirely possible. So at a hearing over whether to disqualify Ms. Fannie Willis last week, I'm reading directly from the New York Post article now, Bradley claimed on the stand that he had no knowledge of when the two prosecutors started dating. That would be the business partner to Nathan Wade. So he's apparently doing exactly what the Cindy lady said she overheard Fannie tell him to do, you know, because Fannie's like, oh, it's not in their business, not in their business. The filing says Yeager, that would be Cindy Yeager, would swear under oath that that was at odds, Bradley's testimony, with what Yeager heard in person, that the romance began in 2019 during Willis's district attorney campaign. Amazing, because, you know, Willis was so proud. She went on this little TV show, this like public access TV show, where she was like, you know, the people of Fulton County deserve somebody who's not going to be sleeping with their employees and benefiting financially from taxpayers. And I'm like, oh my goodness. I mean, be careful where you start heading, Fannie, and the things that you're saying. So Bradley, that would be Nathan Wade's business partner, also texted a lawyer for another Trump co-defendant, according to the New York Post, that the pair were absolutely dating before Willis hired Wade to manage the Trump prosecution in November 2021. And he muttered, oh, dang, when confronted with that evidence on the stand. So again, all of this is about the timing, but don't tell that to the ladies of The View. They don't quite understand any of this. I mean, here they are thinking this is not anybody's business. And now why are we even talking about this? Let's go to Sunny Houston and Joy Behar. Sunny, who I guess graduated from law school and thinks she's the be all end all legal expert there on The View.
Okay, so defense attorneys are making the case for what they call a conflict of interest. Meanwhile, the two lawyers prosecuting her, who were questioning her.
They're married.
They're married to each other, and they have a law firm together.
Yes, they do.
So isn't that a conflict of interest, and do they have a problem, do they have a case against
her? They don't have a case against her. I think this is certainly just a political move. This is so that Trump can push this and try to kick this case and this can down the road so that if he becomes president, God forbid, of the United States, then he's going to say, you can't prosecute me in state court because I'm too busy being... He's not really going to be too busy, but he's too busy being the president of the United States. So that's what this is really about. Yeah. And Georgia has a law in place that it is not unethical or illegal to have a romantic relationship with co-counsel, even opposing counsel. Can you imagine that? The only thing, because I would imagine in Georgia and all places across the country, men would not be able to practice law. If it were,
but did they have to disclose
the audience?
Is that what it is?
Explain to the audience
what the problem is.
The problem, though, is that there are you cannot have a financial interest in the outcome of the case, and so that's their argument, that because he was being paid by her office, and then she somehow went on dates with him or had a got a gift from him, the fact that he was being paid per hour made her possibly want to drag the case out because that would have benefited her.
They have to prove.
Yeah. Okay. So at least Sunny was willing to admit that. However, they still keep taking issue with all of this because, you know, you can't go after poor Fannie. Can't go after. She checks every demographic box, which, by the way, she kept saying and trying to make an issue of on the stand and at church as well when she was awarded some kind of award. Listen, I actually think this woman is going to have some major, major trouble ahead. President Trump, former President Trump at a rally over the weekend highlighting the insanity of all of these text messages. I mean, wild. Watch.
I was indicted by Fannie in Georgia. Fannie.
How did that work out? And her lover, Nathan Wade. And they hired him for almost $1 million because of his great, great experience. Of course, he didn't have any experience. He had experience in something else. You know that. A lot of experience.
He's funny. He's funny. Oh, we don't have the rest of it, too, because it goes on. He's great. He's like, oh, you know, Melania and I, you know, we've got a great relationship. I don't think I've sent Melania 3,000 texts. She hasn't sent me 3,000 texts. Like, I don't think anybody sends 3,000 texts or has 2,500 phone calls. I mean, it's pretty darn funny stuff. But again, ultimately here, ultimately, it's going to be a problem for Fannie Willis. And it's amazing how, like, just every single thing keeps coming back to bite these people, whether it be Griswold out in Colorado, and she just can't understand why the Supreme Court in the United States of America wouldn't be willing to go on with her grand idea that somehow she can kick a guy she doesn't like off the ballot, or whether it be what's going on there in Fulton County, where somehow we're not allowed to call out Fannie Willis because she's doing something that would be financially inappropriate and then lying about it. Remember Martha Stewart? I mean, this is the kind of stuff you go to jail for, folks. Seriously, jail. So Fannie better watch her fanny. Okay, that was too easy. I got to get to this because this is just staggering. There is brand new news that more than 300,000 migrants were flown into this country by none other than Joe Biden. This coming to us from the Daily Mail, as well as a number of other reports. Biden administration is actually admitting it now, that they flew in more than 320,000 to various cities all throughout the United States of America. And they did this because they had some kind of new app with a program where people could file for asylum from their country, and then they could come here, and then they would be flown into the country to wherever and dropped off. And they never... The Biden administration never told us, never bothered to actually tell anybody. And the cities where they were getting dropped off in, never told the cities, never told the people, because they thought, well, that's going to create a political problem. You think? I mean, this seems really unbelievable to me. It seems like such a violation of trust. I mean, to say, okay, you know, come one, come all. Elon Musk is out there. He's going crazy. He's tweeting all over, forgive me, Xing? What do we call it now? He's all over X, putting all kinds of statements out saying that this is really dangerous. I mean, you could have some kind of major problem from a national security standpoint as a result of this. He also insinuated that this was a desire to get votes. I'll just say this. I don't know what it is, but I think it's pretty darn stupid. I mean, you got a choice. It's either stupid or it's deliberate. So maybe if you go with the votes thing, it's deliberate. They don't have the votes yet, but maybe this is a long-term plan. I don't know. But it's really stupid from a national security standpoint and from an electability standpoint. I mean, you're Joe Biden. You want to actually get elected in 2024. So why would you do this? Why would you fly in 320,000 plus people and say, okay, we're going to plunk you in this city and that city, and we're not even going to tell anybody about it. We're just going to let you, like, infiltrate. Eventually, you're going to get found out. Eventually, you're going to admit to it. This was a big investigation that was done in part by the Center for Immigration Studies, and there are FOIA records in the whole nine yards. And so now they're found out, and people are rightly furious. You are a country. You have borders. Like, how is this that hard to understand? Yes, we're a nation of immigrants. We're proud of it. I'm an Irish immigrant. Super proud of it. Had family that came here, like, going back to the potato famine, okay? You know what? Thank goodness. Thank goodness America is what America is. But let's just come to this recognition and understanding that you got to play by the rules. And this seems extremely dubious, because if you don't even tell the local governments that these people are coming in, and then all of a sudden they don't have the capacity in their hospitals and in their schools and in their communities to handle the people, then what are you, is this a big giant F you to America? That's how it feels, guys. A big giant F you to America. And that's why it can't continue. I mean, I can tell you, this is one of the reasons why I'm really proud, to partner up with the folks over at JCN. JoinJCN.com. I want you to go to this because this is an organization that so passionately cares about small business owners in America, and it cares about having the policies in place for us to be able to fight back as a nation. I mean, you look at what's going on right now with the border. The border crisis is impacting so many Americans throughout the country. I don't care where you live because, hey, they're flying them in, 320,000 plus of them, and you've got higher crime. Just look at the stats in New York City. Look at the horror that we're seeing in New York City, the NYPD officers getting beaten up, and then somehow they don't have the ability to keep the guys there in prison. They let them go without bail. Some of them anyway. I mean, this is impacting small business owners. Think about the small business owners in Times Square that, you know, have to worry about their stuff getting shoplifted, et cetera, et cetera. It is affecting all of us. And this is why an organization like JCN is just a great, great place for you to be, because they are committed to this and they're working hard to make sure that we have better policies in place to protect people, to protect small business owners that are being left vulnerable because of this border crisis. You know, they actually run the only national scientific poll on small businesses and what they actually are finding. You got to go to the website to find out, but they're finding that small businesses are faring much more tragically, I should say, under Biden's presidency than they fared under the presidency of Donald Trump. This does not surprise me, guys. But I just want to give them a plug because they're working hard to make sure that we've got the policies that are going to help us. Go and check them out. JoinJCN.com. That's what you need to do. Be a part of this because this is an organization that cares about you, that cares about small business, and cares about America. Really and truly. I mean, we got to work together. There's so many forces out there, forces of communism, of socialism, of progressivism that want to work against our capitalist meritocracy that has made us a great nation we are. So we got to fight back against this. I'm doing my part. My brand new venture I'm so proud of. Again, I'm going to put it. Can I put it in the actual notes here with all of you? I see so many. Leslie, it's good to see you again. Don, as always, great. I see so many Reaganites here on the platform as well. It's really good to see you. But anyway, 76research.com just debuted this morning, actually. Just debuted. It's been a labor of love here for the last however many months. We've talked about it for years. My friend Rob, who's a really like just superstar, amazing investor and fund manager. He's been on Wall Street for 25 years. He has been investing in running mutual funds for 25 years and just absolutely positively incredible. And he's been up against sort of the same thing that like I'm up against, right? With mainstream media, he's experienced it from the financial side. And I'm like, what's tragic is that everyday American investors are getting lost in all of this. So what can we do collectively together to help people cut through this noise and to understand what they should be investing in for the long term? So I want you to go check it out. Do we have the website? Maybe you can throw it up there again if it's handy, Drew. People can see it, 76research.com, 76research.com. There is a ton of free content for you, including our free guide to independent investing. The whole idea here is you're going to independently invest. You're not going to have all these biases that are coming from legacy media. You're not going to have the biases that are coming from the likes of the Wall Street, frankly, that say, okay, you can only do this, you can only do that. So you can sign up. There's a bunch of free stuff. You can get the 76 Report, which is our flagship newsletter. It's guys, it's cheap. I deliberately did this. As I said, it's a labor of love. So if nothing else, you should get the actual newsletter, the flagship newsletter, the 76 Report. You know why I called it 76 too, right? 1776. We can talk about that another day. But anyway, we've got lots of different portfolios for income building, for resilience, American resilience, and also the inflation protection, which was really important to me. I said, Rob, you know what? I'm worried about inflation. I want people to have a way to protect themselves from inflation. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. You know, we've talked about some of them here. And so these are some of the offerings there. we also have a Founders Club offering for you too. So I encourage you to go check that out. Again, it is 76research.com. You can watch a little video with me and Rob, and you can read and explore all of those great things. I love seeing you here. We have so much to discuss. Super Tuesday happening tonight. Who do you think is going to win? Who is the GOP nominee going to be? Dun, dun, dun. Let me know in the comments below, and I'll see you tomorrow.